Thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to remind parties that your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session, at which time you may press star one to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Dave Daigle. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. And thank you all for joining us today for the media telebriefing on CDC's MMWR Surveillance Summary on Autism. We are joined today by Dr. Katherine Rice, a behavioral health scientist with CDC's National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. She is also the lead author of the MMWR Surveillance Summary. We'll begin with a short introductory remarks by Dr. Rice, and we'll take questions right after that. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I would like to thank all of you again for joining us today. We would like to brief you on the report that CDC is releasing in today's MMWR Surveillance Summary on Prevalence of Autism Spectrum Disorders. The CDC considers ASDs to be a significant public health issue. Increased concern in communities, continued demand for services, and increasing estimates of ASD prevalence underscore the need for a coordinated and strong response to improve the lives of people with ASDs. These results reflect data collected by the Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, or ADAM, in multiple communities throughout the U.S. from the year 2006, indicating that the identified prevalence of ASDs to be about 1% of 8-year-old children in the U.S. This study uses data based on a retrospective review of health and education records from reporting communities, which included over 300,000, or about 8% of the U.S. population of 8-year-olds. All children in the included study were 8 years of age, because previous research has shown that tracking this age helps us get the most complete estimate of who is affected with an ASD. The findings in this report are in line with other recently published estimates, including those released in October that were based on a telephone survey. The new report finds that between 4.2 to 12.1 per 1,000 children, with an average of 9.0 per 1,000 children, were identified with an ASD. This translates to about 1 in 80 and 1 in 240 children, with an average of about 1 in 110 identified with an ASD. There were 10 communities who participated in an earlier 2002 surveillance year and the newer 2006 surveillance year. These communities observed an increase in identified ASD prevalence ranging from 27% to 95%, with an average increase of 57%. Identified ASD prevalence increased across all sex, racial, ethnic, and cognitive functioning subgroups. For all sites, the most consistent pattern was the increase among boys. ASD prevalence was 4 to 5 times higher for boys than for girls, with 1 in 70 boys and 1 in 315 girls identified with an ASD on average. Increases were found among boys in 9 of the 10 communities and among girls in 4 communities, with the average increase of 60% for boys and 48% for girls. Identified ASD prevalence increased on average 55% for white children, 41% for black children, and 90% for Hispanic children. This study also helped to determine other important characteristics about children with an ASD. In both 2002 and 2006, a similar proportion of children with an ASD also tested as having an intellectual disability, averaging 46% in 2002 and 41% in 2006. So intellectual disability, also more commonly referred to as mental retardation. In both 2002 and 2006, a similar proportion of children with ASD were diagnosed ever with the autistic disorder subtype by a professional in the community, averaging 45% in 2002 and 47% in 2006. Between 13 to 30% of children identified with an ASD had a report of regression or loss of skills by the age of 2 years. As we know, early intervention is important for children with developmental delays. This study found that concerns regarding the development before the age of 2 years were noted in the evaluation records of most children identified, but the average age of first ASD diagnosis was much later at 4.5 years of age. We know that more children are identified with an ASD than in the past. These new numbers are concerning and indicate that even more individuals, families, and communities are struggling to find answers. No single factor explains the changes in identified ASD prevalence over the time period studied. Some of the increases are due to better detection, particularly among children who may not have come to attention in the past, including girls, Hispanic children, and children without cognitive impairment. However, a simple explanation is not apparent, and a true increase in risk cannot be ruled out. We know there are multiple and complex genetic and environmental factors which result in multiple forms of autism, and we have much to learn about the causes. CDC is currently enrolling for the Study to Explore Early Development, or SEED study, to help identify risk and protective factors for ASDs and other developmental disabilities. SEED is studying potential risk factors that may be related to genes, health conditions, and other factors that affected the mother's pregnancy and the child's first few years of life. In addition, CDC is committed to help people understand developmental milestones for children through the Learn the Signs, Act Early campaign. This campaign, launched in 2004, helps inform parents, healthcare professionals, and early educators about the importance of monitoring a child's developmental milestones and obtaining early intervention services when delays are identified. Our commitment to finding answers also includes being a member of the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee, or IACC, which was formed to address the coordination of autism research. The IACC has both federal and public members with a range of perspectives, including advocacy groups, researchers, and individuals affected with ASD. Concerted and collaborative efforts are important to address the many needs associated with ASDs. CDC considers ASDs a significant public health concern. We will continue our work in tracking trends and our research into potential risk factors so that we can understand changes in ASD rates over time. We hope that these new data might raise awareness about ASDs to help improve early identification and intervention, and to provide information for policy and service planning, which will ultimately help meet the growing needs of individuals, families, and communities affected by ASDs. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Rice. Operator, we'll take questions now.
Our first question is from Joanne Allen from Reuters. Your line is open.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about some of the possible causes or cause and effect, and what's being done in the way of development or treatment?
So in terms of causes and treatment, this study in particular didn't investigate causes, but there is a very large effort going on in terms of research, which is coordinated by the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee, which has both public and private members, including the federal government and other large organizations that are doing autism research. Really, there's a multi-pronged approach going on because we know that there's no single cause for autism. We're not going to find the one answer, that there are going to be multiple causes for multiple forms of autism. So much of the research is looking into genetics, also trying to improve the understanding of genetics as both heritable and non-inheritable. In addition to trying to expand our ability to look at environmental factors, and how do you look at those factors, genetic and environmental interactions, together? I would definitely refer you to the IACC Strategic Research Plan on the NIH website to get additional information in terms of what the current sort of seen as the best needed goals are for autism research right now.
Thank you, Joanne. Next question, please, operator.
The next question is from Daniel Danoon, WebMD. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. So you all are saying that you can't rule out that there is a true increase. Does this? But I'm wondering if you could go a little further on this. It does look like none of these factors, singly or together, that we can think of, can really account for this increase. So are we really looking at a true increase of prevalence that with these numbers matching so closely those numbers recently done from the telephone survey? what can we say about this looking like a very, very real and rather striking increase?
Well, I think it, in some ways, it is helpful that we have multiple studies looking, using different methods across multiple countries, all kind of converging that 1% is the current estimate, or about 1% the current estimate of ASD prevalence. When we looked at our particular study, one thing we're trying to do is to tease out what factors can we measure and identify over time that can help us say how much is due to identification. This is really the first effort that we've made in terms of looking at some of these factors, and we'll continue to examine these data to try to get deeper. But right now we can say that some of it was due to better record keeping because we have a records-based methodology. So we found more evaluations per child, more information in those records, in addition to identifying particular subgroups. So we clearly know that some of this is an identification issue. But in saying how much is due to true risk is really a question of the trends and the reasons for those trends and relates so much to the causes of autism. So we have seen from research that there are a variety of items that have come about as potential causes. So, for instance, increasing risk for having an older parental age, for instance. Or there's been some indications of variation in terms of exposure to various hazardous air pollutants. So we need to go back and look at these data so we can try and examine additional factors. At this point, it's impossible to say how much exactly is a true increase and how much is identification, but we certainly know that this helps us know that it's important to look for the causes of autism and to take these data to help us intervene for those individuals that are here now.
Thanks, Daniel. Next question, please, operator.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. The next is from Stephen Smith from Boston Globe. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Rice, and thanks for taking the questions. I have two, if I may, please. Could you discuss the fairly broad incidence rates that you found, the broad differences among sites, roughly to go from 4 per 1,000 to 12 per 1,000? That's a fairly broad range. What does that say to you? And secondly, I was hoping that you might address the whole issue of this study in the context of vaccination. One of the putative causes that some groups have put out there for autism is thimerosal and vaccine. Clearly, if we're talking about 8-year-olds in 2006, this is a cohort that would have been vaccinated at a time after thimerosal had, in the main, been removed from those childhood vaccines. So if this is an increase, what does this say about laying to rest the concerns that had existed around thimerosal?
Okay, so going back to the first question about the range in terms of prevalence rate. So we did find a range from 4.2 to 12.1. Surprisingly, 7 of the sites were in a consistent range where they were closer, being between 95 to 130 per every one child having an ASD. So in the sites that had a lower prevalence, in those particular sites, they had part of it has to do with in terms of the methodology and having less information available and the types of records that they were able to review, where some sites were able to look at both health and education records and some sites were not. So we think that the sites on the lower end are an underestimate. On the higher end, it's a challenge to say why some of those sites have identified a higher prevalence, but they are in range with the overall average, as well as some studies in Europe and Asia showing over about 1%. So that gives us some indication of the variation over time. And also, given that autism is a behaviorally defined disorder, we would always expect to have some variation in terms of the prevalence estimates. Although we try to boil things down to a single number, there's always going to be somewhat of a range, so we would expect that.
So, in the context of vaccination.
So in the second question, in the context of vaccinations, this study in particular wasn't designed to look at risk factors or causes in and of itself. So it doesn't specifically say anything about vaccinations. So one thing that you had mentioned in terms of timing, these children were born in 1998 and were 8 years of age in 2006. So at this point, thimerosal was still was being removed, I believe, phasing out in 2001. So we need to continue to track prevalence of autism in future cohorts to see how variation would change based on that timing.
Thanks very much, Stephen. Next question, operator.
The next is from Ben Carey, New York Times. Your line is open.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking the question. I would like to know about the range of two questions. One is about the range of the spectrum. So it clearly includes severe autism, but I'm interested in the other side of that range. What did it include? You know, social difficulty, pervasive developmental disorder, Asperger's. What's the universe there?
Okay, so when we say children were identified with ASD or autism spectrum disorder, we include what's typically the three primary autism spectrum disorders: autistic disorder, Asperger's disorder, and atypical autism or pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. And as I mentioned, in 2002 and 2006, we saw pretty similar proportion of children who were identified with autistic disorder ever. So 45% in 2002 and 47% in 2006.
Ben, did you have another question?
So the estimate is based on a review. It sounds like a review of health and school records. Does that mean the researchers did they not meet the kids?
So, yeah, this was based on a review of existing records, but rather than only taking the diagnosis as it was documented in the record, we had a team of clinicians who went through and evaluated the descriptions in the records to confirm the presence of the DSM-4 criteria for autism, Asperger's, or PDD-NOS to meet the general case definition of ASD.
Thanks very much, Ben. Next question, please, operator.
The next is from Stacy Singer, the Palm Beach Post. Your line is open.
You just answered my question. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Stacy. Next question, please, operator.
The next is Heidi Sleet, Pediatric News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. What is the take-home message for pediatricians from these findings? What should they be telling parents at this point?
So at this point, in terms of pediatricians, as you may know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has encouraged continuous ongoing developmental screening and recently also included a recommendation that all children are screened for autism at 18 and 24 months. So I think given the fact that we found that the majority of children, somebody was concerned about their development, typically language development before the age of two, but there was quite a delay in diagnosis at 4.5 years of age. So at this point, what pediatricians should be doing is, one, listening to parents if they have a concern about their child's development, but also proactively following the screening guidelines, and if they have a concern, referring that child on for further evaluation, whether it's diagnostic or potential intervention, such as provided by the 0-3 programs in every state.
Thank you, Heidi. Next question, please, operator.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question, press star 1 and record your name. The next is from Delphia Ricks from Newsday. Your line is open.
Hello there. You mentioned earlier something about, and I didn't get all of it, mental retardation. Are children who were once diagnosed as mentally retarded now considered to have an ASD? Can you explain that, please?
So in terms of mental retardation, or what's it's now more commonly referred to as intellectual disability, we know there's quite an overlap in intellectual disability and autism spectrum disorders, and for many years, the best statistics and estimates told us that 75% or three-quarters of children with autism also had an intellectual disability. Now the numbers that we're identifying in our study shows us it's more about 40%, or more specifically 41% of children with autism having an intellectual disability. So overall, this is a population with less intellectual impairment, sometimes referred to as more a higher functioning population. So there are many theories out there in terms of, is this diagnostic shifting in how we look at things, or are we really seeing a more high functioning population? That's challenging to sort out.
Thank you very much, Delphia. Operator, do we have another question?
The next is from Kelly Brewington, the Baltimore Sun. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for answering my question. I have a question about the comparison between the boys' prevalence and girls. The 1 in 70 average for boys and 1 in 315 for girls. Do you have that a number for the figures from 2002? Is there somewhere I can find those?
We do have those. I don't have them right off the top of my head right now, but we could try to follow up with you on that.
Well, Kelly, we'll run that down for you if you want to give us a call back here at the press office. And, operator, I think that was our last question. Do we have anybody else in the queue?
We have one more question.
All right, thanks. This will make this our last question.
This is from Alice Park, Time Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Could you just address the issue of early intervention? We've been hearing in recent years about programs that are actually getting at many of these children very early. And does your statistics reflect any of that?
So in terms of early intervention, primarily what this study reflects is the age at which kids are getting diagnosed and the age at which concerns were documented. We don't have detailed information on the interventions that they're receiving at this point. There is some recent research out that may speak to that, but this particular study does not.
Thank you, Alice. Operator, I think we have one more. We'll make this one our last one.
The next is from Miriam Falco, CNN. Your line is open.
Thanks, Dr. Rice. I have one quick question. It's just a little one. How much did the average age of diagnosis change between 2002 and 2006? Was it 1 month, 5 months, how many months? I know
five.
That it's 5 months.
5 months on average. It varied by site how much it changed, but on average it was 5 months.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam, and thank you, operator. Thanks for everyone for joining us. We'll have a transcript posted hopefully in a matter of hours for this. Take care.